The Reclaiming America for Christ radio network is on the air. Stay tuned for today's Heartland Nation with Pastor Bruce DeLay.
The Heartland Nation program is pleased to announce that we are now part of the Reclaiming America for Christ effort. Welcome home to Heartland.
Sing a song about the Heartland.
Well, good evening, Boston. Welcome to the Heartland Nation program. My name is Bruce DeLay. I am your host on Tuesday evenings right here on WROL 950. I hope that you have brought in some firewood. I trust that the brass monkeys are all in off the back porch. Whatever it is you need to do to get ready, if there was any food left on the shelves at the grocery store that you snagged it, and you've got the rice and beans on the stove right now, I don't know. I just know that this happens from time to time. And those, like everything else in life, those who are prepared seem to fare better than those who don't. Of course, as a preacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ, my duty is to remind you that you must be prepared for what's coming. And that is not just a snowstorm. That's not just historic weather events. It is the second coming of Jesus Christ, the end of the world, so forth, where at that point, either you received Christ or you rejected Christ. And at that point, what you did with Jesus will be the single most important thing you've ever done. And so I ask you today, what have you done with Jesus? Do you understand He is the only Savior? He is the only hope for America, and He is the only hope for you and me individually to save us from our own sin. I pray that you would know Him, and that you would give your heart to Him tonight if you have not already. And if you have already, buckle your seatbelt. We're going to go to work here in just a moment, and we're going to talk about the things of God. We're going to discuss in real life terms, not religiously. We're going to discuss headlines of the day. We're going to discuss things that pertain to life and godliness. We're going to discuss real life in the light of who God is. All right, so let's get started. Why not start here? All right, let's start with the big story of the day. This from The Blaze. This potentially historic northeastern blizzard could possibly go all the way back to topping a list of all of their storms all the way back to 1872, I am told. This story, Associated Press, picked up by The Blaze. A winter that has largely spared the Northeast so far is about to arrive with gusto. The storm that the National Weather Service called potentially historic could dump 2 to 3 feet of snow from northern New Jersey all the way up to Connecticut. If I read my information correctly, we're talking also 65-mile-an-hour gusts of wind in this blizzard. National Weather Service saying, you know, this massive storm, it's already underway. It's already, dumping a lot of the white stuff right there in Boston. This could be a storm, the National Weather Service, predicts, the likes of which we've never seen before. This at a news conference over the weekend. Then the mayor of New York, Mr. Bill de Blasio. What a winner this guy is, right? Well, anyway, he held up a piece of paper showing the city's top 10 snowstorms, said this one could land at the top of the list all the way back to 1872, and warned people not to underestimate the storm. On and on, basically, you've probably heard every angle from the newspaper to the radio to the television, everything that's able to be said about this storm. Normally, when this happens, let's face it, most of the time it does not live up to the historic or monstrous or unprecedented, vocabulary, but you never know. You need to be prepared. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to read you a scripture because, we can talk about, obviously somebody's going to blame this on global warming, climate change, And I always say, yeah, I believe in climate change. Summer, spring, summer, fall, winter, spring. That's your climate change right there in a nutshell. Every year we have climate change. At least we do in this part of the country where I broadcast from, Oklahoma. Some parts, not so much. If you live in Florida, you may not have much climate change, you know. But that's somebody's going to blame this on something, and it'll support some liberal agenda, and the progressives will declare that this proves something about whatever. But the fact is, I think the Bible speaks for itself, speaks clearly about things like this. Thousands of years before modern technology, this comes from the book of Job, chapter 37. Check this out. See what you think about this as, understanding these kinds of things. Verse 5 of chapter 37 of the book of Job says, God thundereth marvelously with his voice. King James Version, by the way, in case you didn't notice. Okay. God thundereth marvelously with his voice. Great things doeth he, which we cannot comprehend. First of all, man today thinks he can comprehend everything. The Bible declares man can't comprehend everything. There are some things man can't comprehend. We call it thunder snow, and we've had that here where I live, and it sounds like you're getting some of that there in the Boston area. God thundereth marvelously with his voice. If you listen to the thunder snow, you can actually kind of hear the voice of God speaking through creation. The New Testament even says in Romans that God uses creation to speak, trying to communicate something to man. What could that be? Well, let's go on and see if we can pick up on what it is God's trying to communicate through his thundering voice. For he saith unto the snow, be thou upon the earth, likewise to the small rain and to the great rain of his strength. So God just basically says to the snow, fall on the earth, and it obeys him. Verse 7 says, he sealeth up the hand of every man, that all men may know his work. I think the Amplified Bible, you know, talks about that he stops the work of men with the weather in this verse. It talks about, you know, every time I'm stuck in an airport because of the weather, I think of this verse. I think, you know what? What this says, what God's voice is thundering through a storm like this is man is not God. God is God. God is overall. Man is finite. Man is not infinite. Man is not all-knowing. He's not omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent. He's none of those things. Man is at the mercy of the weather. It even stops the work of his hands when the snow plows can't plow that much snow, and when businesses have to close, the schools are closed and so forth, the buses can't run. All it does is remind man that he is man and that God is God. That's you might think that's pretty basic, but folks, if we don't get that one, we start believing all kinds of crazy stuff about how wonderful man is and how great man can be and how high the towers are that we can build, and we can build them to heaven and we can be like God ourselves. No, not hardly. We pay thousands of dollars for air conditioning, and God can air condition the whole planet at the snap of his fingers. That's a slight difference between God and man. Even as great of things that man can do, it's nowhere near. It does not approach the majesty of God himself. It goes on to say that during weather like we're experiencing right now, that God seals up the hands of every man that all men may know his work. Then the beasts go into their dens and remain in their places. Even the animals bow, you know, to the weather. They just want to survive. It says, out of the south cometh the whirlwind, and cold out of the north. By the breath of God, frost is given, and the breath of the waters is straightened. Also by watering, he wearieth the thick cloud. He scattereth his bright cloud. Isn't that interesting? The Bible predates science and history and all the technology we have today. And yet, all the way back there, it is revealed that by watering, he wearieth the thick cloud. When the water gets too heavy, guess what? It begins to rain. And that's been true all along. Science discovered it later. but it's right here in your Bible back in Job 37. It says, the weather, the clouds, are turned round about by his counsels, that they may go whatsoever he commandeth them to do upon the face of the world and the earth. He causes it to come, whether for correction or for his land for mercy. Interesting. That would indicate to me that our prayers can affect the weather sometimes. It says here again that God turns around about by his counsels. The weather turns around by whatever he says, that they may do whatsoever he commands them upon the face of the world in the earth. And he can use the weather in verse 13 for correction for his land or for mercy. If you need rain, it'll rain if you pray. If you need, if the land is full of wickedness and needs correction, he can also handle that. And as somebody who has prayed and seen tornadoes dissipate, go up over my house and go northeast from the southwest as they normally travel. I remember one night at a prayer meeting, right as our meeting was about to begin, we realized that there were tornado warnings, and so the men went out in the backyard, and we watched a wall cloud. We counted 7 funnels in that wall cloud dipping down, and none of them yet touching the ground, hit a power station just southwest of our house. Watched the electricity go up into the air from that power station, and then prayed, watched the wall cloud go over our house. Went into the house, going out into the front yard to see it continue on to the northeast. And I guess we quit praying too soon because it destroyed 92 homes to our north and east. But the point is, according to this scripture, God, who is in charge of the weather, should be revered, that the fear of God, the awesomeness of God, the reality of who he is, he's not just a faraway, some entity that has no interaction with men. No, the fact is, he's even intimately acquainted with the weather. And that's what Job 37 talks about. Now, you and I are experiencing, in a storm like this, you experience the fact that God can just, at the snap of his fingers, put man in a reposed position, shut things down, cause his work to cease. And if he thinks that everybody needs a break, hey, well, maybe he's giving you a break today. On the other hand, I would remind you, all the preparation that you went to, hopefully you made some preparation before this storm, all that preparation is like unto the preparation that we need for what is about to come to pass in America. Economic collapse, economic problems, and so forth. Every challenge you can see coming by the headlines of the news, we should be preparing for those things. As Christians, we should be able to give an answer to people who need to know what to prepare for, and so forth. So take this as a little bit of a lesson here. Let me, before we jump into some pretty serious stuff, I would like to share this story with you because this is so bizarre. I mean, this is one of those things that it's like the antithetical, it's like a skit of cynicism and what's the word I'm looking for? Somebody who's very sarcastic, but no, it's a true story. A cake shop, this cake shop in Colorado faces legal action, and you think it's going to be because they wouldn't make a Christian a cake or something like that. No, cake shop faces legal action for refusing to make an anti-LGBT cake. So this guy goes into the Azucar Bakery, which now finds itself in hot waters over the message that was meant to go on a Bible-shaped cake. The staff at the South Broadway spot would not make this cake. This guy comes in and orders a cake. He says, I want it to look like a Bible. Oh, yeah, we have something that looks like a big book. Okay, what do you want it to say on there? He says, I want it to say, God hates homosexuality. And then it says other anti-LGBT text and imagery on the cake. And they refused to do the cake. Well, the anti-homosexual imagery on the cake was two dudes holding hands, and it had a circle around it with a line through it, like, no, none of this. So they refuse. So guess what? The guy goes in there several more times, asking him again, and et cetera. I think the owner's brother ran the guy off the last time he came in. And so the guy goes down to the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, and he files a discrimination complaint. He says, these people won't make a cake like I want them to. Now, I don't know. Is this guy on the level? I don't know if he's being, real, if he's really going to go to all this trouble just to get a cake. Who's going to eat this cake? What is this cake? What occasion is a cake for that says God hates homosexuality? I don't know. They're going to be a party of people that go and laugh and sing and eat this cake. It just seems too outlandish. It sounds to me like this guy's trying to make a point. And it's a point well taken, because bakers all over the country, when they refuse to do a homosexual wedding cake, for example, with two guys or two chicks kissing each other on top of the cake, they get slapped with all kinds of fines, and now you've got to go to a re-education class. Does the class have barbed wire around it? Is it a camp or is it a class? This is what people are facing. So maybe he's just in a bizarre act of sarcasm. Maybe he's trying to show the other side what it's like to have a discrimination lawsuit and complaint filed against them. I don't know. This struck me, though, as kind of ironic and pretty funny. And just how ridiculous the other side has been to do such things. The BLT with cheese crowd, better known to some as the LGBT movement. I would just say, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. I don't know. Sorry. I just think today we are losing our minds in America. We've lost common sense. We've lost the sense of what America is. It's freedom. There's a First Amendment. And if somebody has a business and they don't want to promote your thing, they ought to be able to say, we reserve the right to refuse service to you. Find a bakery that will bake that cake, or bake your own cake. But you can't force other people to bend to your ideologies and serve you what violates their own Christian and religious conscience. In this case, I think that the LGBT crowd are getting, a taste of their own medicine. Well, let's move to same topic, that is homosexuality in America today, but a little more serious situation. I've been watching a lot of these potential. Now, everybody is thinking about running for president. They're not quite doing it yet and all that. I've been watching all these potential, GOP candidates for president. And they're saying a lot of things and so forth. You're kind of beginning to get a feel for who's who and who's going to run and everything. And one of the things I notice is certain of this group are getting really grilled and quizzed by the left-stream media. Those who believe that abortion and homosexuality are sacraments of secular humanism, I guess, the religion of secular humanism. This is their baptism and communion. Apparently, because they just guard it as if it's, their religious, when they won't let anybody else have any religious convictions, but they got theirs. So now on all these different guys like Bobby Jindal, Mike Huckabee, and those on the far right, you might say, are getting quizzed, especially on abortion, especially on homosexual rights, especially on same-sex marriage. And so I've watched this. Bobby Jindal did a great job fielding questions and snide comments by, I believe it was a CNN reporter the other day. I saw that. I saw Mike Huckabee on, I think it might have been CNN. I think it was another on CNN, where he handled himself very well, must say. But in Bobby Jindal's state of Louisiana, of which he is the governor, beloved, you know, son of immigrants, who is a Christian man and set and so forth. I felt like he did a great job. Now, in his state, maybe one of the reasons he understands the issue so well is that he is privy to things like this in his state. This is happening right now in the state of Louisiana. The headline is, this is from CNS News, headline, adults raised by gay couples speak out against gay marriage in federal court. Now, can we have an adult conversation here about same-sex marriage? Can I even read the contents of this article and commentate about it and, you know, pontificate on it on the air? Is this okay? I mean, this is pretty powerful stuff. Now we have reached the point where people have been living as same-sex, quote-unquote, partners for a long enough time to have raised children. Whose children they are, I don't know. Are they one of the pair's, you know, natural children? Or did they adopt them? It's hard to say. One thing I do know, they're not the children of both the parents. It's impossible for one male and another male to have a child. It's impossible for one female and another female to have their own child. So I'm sure that, evil scientists are working on that right now, but they have not achieved that. I want to read this to you. This is from the perspective of children who have been raised in same-sex environments and now are in their adulthood speaking out against gay marriage, same-sex marriage, in federal court. Four adult children of same-sex parents have submitted amicus briefs in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals asking that it oppose the legislation of same-sex marriage. You see, Louisiana is facing what so many other states have already faced, the arbitrary judicial tyranny of a federal judge who is appointed, not even elected, who is going to decide after the state has already had votes to amend their state constitution to define marriage as between one man and one woman. Now, a federal appointed judge is going to rule and say, no, you have to have same-sex marriage in your state, regardless of the will of the people, regardless of the consent of the governed. You're going to do what the federal government tells you you're going to do. And so now, this is before the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, and people are trying to bolster the right of the state to make its own decision by showing that one side shows nothing but the glamorous and the victimization and all the reasons you should vote for, you know, same-sex marriage. And the other side, apparently these four adult children of same-sex unions are trying to say, no, it is a living hell to grow up in a same-sex home. Obviously, this is not an exact science. There's probably some kids who made it through with a better experience than these, but you need to hear this. The court in New Orleans, Louisiana, heard comments and arguments on January 9th as it considers whether to uphold traditional marriage in this circuit court, Fifth Circuit, in Texas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. It lists all the judges there and et cetera. And then it says that these individuals, four different ones, two men and two women, all grew up with homosexual parents. All four of these now adults argued that redefining marriage to include same-sex couples would potentially harm children by depriving them of a mother or a father, two moms or two dads instead of a mother and a father. In their brief, one of these adults, Dawn Stefanowitz, described her experience living in a same-sex household. Quote, I wasn't surrounded by average heterosexual couples, she says in her court brief. Dad's partners slept and ate in our home, and they took me along to meetings in places regarding involvement in the LGBT communities, and I was exposed to overt sexual activities like sodomy, nudity, pornography, group sex, sadomasochism, etc., unquote. She says, there was no guarantee that any of my dad's partners would be around for long, and yet I often had to obey them, she said. My rights and innocence were violated. She says, as children, we were not allowed to express our disagreement, our pain, or our confusion. Most adult children from gay households do not feel safe or free to publicly express their stories and lifelong challenges. They fear losing professional licenses, not obtaining employment in their chosen field, or being cut off from some of their family members or losing whatever relationship they do have with their gay parents. Some gay parents have threatened to leave no inheritance unless the children accept their parents' partner of the day, partner du jour, unquote. She says, I grew up with a parent and her partners. No, this is another one. This is a man writing this. B.N. Klein says, I grew up with a parent and her partners in an atmosphere in which gay ideology was used as a tool of repression, retribution, and abuse. He wrote of his experience with a lesbian mother. He says, I have seen that children in gay households often become props to be publicly displayed in order to prove that gay families are just like heterosexual ones, unquote. He said that she taught him that some Jews and most Christians were stupid and hated gays and were violent, that homosexuals were, quote, much more creative and artistic because they were not repressed and were naturally more sensitive with their feelings. Quote, at the time, he says, at the same time, I was given the message that if I did not agree. So at the same time, he's talking about tolerance and how the Christians and Jews are so terrible and homosexuals are so much more sensitive. Says, at the same time, I was given the message that if I did not agree, which I did not, that I was stupid and damned to a life of punishing hostility from my mother and her partner. They did this with the encouragement of all their gay friends in the community, and they were like a cheering squad. I was only allowed out of my room to go to school. This would go on for weeks at a time. I was supposed to hate everyone based on what they thought of my mother and her partner. People's accomplishments didn't matter. Their personal struggles didn't matter. Their own histories were of no consequence. The only thing that mattered was what they thought of gays, unquote. This, again, four adults who have filed a lawsuit trying to stop the implementation of same-sex marriage legalization in the states of Louisiana, Texas, and Mississippi. Robert Lopez, who was also raised by a lesbian mother, who is also one of the names on this lawsuit, amicus brief, says he was also raised by a lesbian mother and her partner, had a different experience, which he described as, quote, the best possible conditions for a child raised by a same-sex couple. Interesting. Best possible conditions under those conditions. He says, quote, I had been formally studied by same-sex parenting experts in 1985. I would have confirmed their rosiest estimations of the LGBT family life, he says, but then went on to argue against same-sex marriage, saying, quote, behind these facades of a happy outcome lay many problems. He describes experiencing a great deal of sexual confusion due to the lack of a father figure in his life. He turned to a life of prostitution with older men as a teenager. He says, quote, I had an inexplicable compulsion to do sexual things with older men. He says, I wanted to have these relationships with older men who were my father's age, though at the time I could scarcely understand what I was doing. The money I received for these sexual things certainly helped me financially because it was allowing me to have certain spending money beyond what I earned with my teenage jobs at a pizzeria and in my mother's psychiatric clinic. He states, in the brief, that the money was not as impactful as the fact that I needed to feel loved and wanted by an older male figure, even if it was only as short as a half an hour. How tragic, how heartbreaking this testimony of this adult man who was raised by two women as I guess mom and mom, instead of having a dad, being deprived of a dad. Says here, as early as 10 years ago, I developed a clear stance on homosexual relationships. A civil union or some other kind of state recognition would have helped my mother and her partner. Yet the traditional marriage laws in New York State, as they existed back then, prevented my mother and her partner from entirely cutting my father out of my life. So this was the motivation. They couldn't quite cut this young boy's father out of his life completely. And so it says the latter reality proved to be pivotal because of my reestablishment of ties to my dad in 1998, and that led to a transition in my life from being lost and sexually confused to being stabilized and romantically fulfilled. Lastly, Katie Faust says she grew up with a lesbian mother and her partner and also testified against gay marriage. And she says, when we institutionalize same-sex marriage, we move from permitting citizens the freedom to live as they choose to promoting same-sex headed households. In doing so, we ignore the true nature of the outcropping of marriage. You know, I have to say, you know, it's not what marriage is. You can call it something else, but you shouldn't call it marriage. That is not what marriage is. Same sex is outside the umbrella of that marriage is. Here she goes on to say, now we are normalizing a family structure where a child will always be deprived of one gender influence and the relationship with at least one natural parent. She says, our cultural narrative becomes one that, in essence, tells children that they have no right to the natural family structure of their biological parents, but that children simply exist for the satisfaction of adult desires, unquote. I don't want to read any more into that than what this poor girl who grew up to be now a woman against same-sex marriage, I don't want to read into what she means by that, but I think if you read between the lines, you can see some things there. So this is going on across the country. We have a nation divided. I've recently been doing a series at our church called The Coming Civil War. The fact is, in September of 2000, I had a vision. It's probably just about the only, at least it's for sure, the greatest vision I've ever had in my life, a visitation from God. And in that, he showed me a coming civil war to our country. One of the aspects of that now, ever since, that has developed is this huge chasm in our country when it comes to the question of marriage, same-sex or traditional. Is same-sex marriage even marriage? I say no. Many people would just begin to shout me down and yet call me the hater simply because I go with thousands of years of history. I go with science. I go with the Bible. I go with all these things, which any reasonable, intelligent, and any kind of person who recognizes God would say, this is what defines marriage. It's one man, one woman, and the ability to, have a family in a traditional way. I know there's exceptions to that. Some people have medical conditions and so forth. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about not only the acceptance and tolerance, talking about now the codification into law and the force-feeding of homosexual marriage upon our nation. And if you don't agree with it, you can't even say anything. You can't even voice your First Amendment privilege opinion. You just can't, because you'll be hammered, you'll lose your job. We've seen it over and over. So this is where we are, and this is only one of the things causing the great divide. Now we have a racist divide. Fanning the flames are now, the Canadians even said recently, they came out with a thing and said, hey, only in America can you say that you have a racism problem and so forth when you have a black president, a black attorney general, et cetera. It was like they're laughing at this from outside our boundaries, and we can't see it from within. It is the race baiters that are causing the resurgence of any kind of racism in the country. And now it's reverse racism. It's mainly black against white, where it used to be white against black. I know some of that still exists. I get that. But not to the extent that these race baiters say that it does. These are all divides. These are all chasms that are driving us toward another coming civil war in our country. The red and the blue, the conservative and the liberal, the Democrat and the Republican, all these issues that are dividing our country have really come to light more in the two-term that we've been enduring, the two-term incumbency now of this president who has done everything not to unite but to divide our country. Now we see these things coming in the next presidential election, and everybody wants to know, what do the candidates say? Who's going to be the one? And I like what Bobby Jindal, again, maybe I should vote for him for president. He hasn't said he's going to run yet, but he hosted a prayer meeting this last weekend. And, he said that the answer is not a presidential candidate. The answer to America is not something that can be legislated. It's not another law that we can pass that will fix the problem. He said the answer for America is a spiritual solution. He said that the answer is the Lord himself, our Father, who sent his Son, Jesus Christ. That's what we need in America is a return to God, not another politician, not another law. I like that. Well, here, the rest of the front runners of Republican candidates, some of these I like, others not so much, but regardless of what I like, I wanted to give you some of their quotes because they had their caucus, their event in Iowa, the thing that happens every year prior to the primaries, the Iowa Freedom Summit, where the likeliest Republican candidates for president tried out their messages in front of a mostly friendly crowd. And so they got some feedback. They got to throw it out there, see what sticks on the wall. And here's Mike Huckabee. He said this. He said, "A beheading is a far greater threat to America than a sunburn. We can't defeat the enemy, Islamic jihadism, if we don't call it what it is." Mike Huckabee. Well, we know he will be strong against Islam and the real threat, looks like. Right now we have a president who finally we've achieved. Somebody said the other day that he's the first girl president. You know, he's about as assertive as a teenage girl, I guess. But when it comes to Islamic jihad, because he won't even name. He's the first president who's weaker than the French. The French now are naming the problem what it is, Islamic jihad and so forth. And he won't even say the words. So, you know, I have to side with Mike Huckabee on that. Sarah Palin here is quoted as saying, "There ain't no such thing as a free lunch. There's no free college," although Barack Obama wants to make it so. She says, "There's no free birth control," although they're handing out condoms and so forth, hand over fist. She said, "Someone always pays." See, there's nothing free. Somebody bought that. Somebody is paying for the college if you're not. "Someone always pays," she says. "To make a buck, you must get off your butt." That's Sarah Palin. So, you know, she's kind of a self-made woman, hard worker, former governor of Alaska. So she is personified that type of American, tradition of working hard and to get what you want instead of sitting back and saying, "Gimme, gimme, gimme. I am owed, an education. I am owed these things." Rick Perry, governor of Texas, said this at the caucus at the Iowa Freedom Summit. He said, "The administration has chosen to abandon our friends and weaken our alliances." Now, this from a former governor, Rick Perry, who obviously is trying to say he understands what's going on in the world. This is the main knock against governors running for president is they don't know anything about foreign policy. And remember, Sarah Palin was, impaled and skewered in the media because she said basically she could see Russia from her house. Well, she basically can see Russia from her house in Alaska. If you don't know geography, the Bering Straits is what separates Alaska, United States, from Russia. And so they made light of that, but only showed their own ignorance when they did so. Rick Perry, they're trying to score some points, apparently, that he understands foreign policy. Donald Trump, I guess he might be running again. I don't know. He says, "I'll probably be the only Republican who doesn't want to cut Social Security. I'm not a cutter of Social Security. I want to make this country so rich that we can afford Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid." So now you know, that's pretty much, we already knew that about Donald Trump. That's his thing. This is Scott Walker, governor of Wisconsin, who fought against the teachers union and won and so forth. He's got some very good qualities, positive things. He says, "There's a reason we take a day off to celebrate the 4th of July and not the 15th of April. Because in America, we value our independence from government, not our dependence upon it." That's Scott Walker. Pretty solid quote there. I didn't know John Bolton was involved here. Is he possibly a candidate? Maybe a former ambassador from the United States. He says, "Barack Obama does not consider American national security a priority. I believe he is the first president since Pearl Harbor who doesn't wake up thinking, what threats does America face today?" And I would have to agree. He wakes up thinking about his tea time, what time, and I'm not talking about, having some tea with some English folks. I'm talking about teeing off on the golf course. That seems to be what's on his mind. Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, who looks like could be running for president, said this: "I don't believe in taking the most important thing a person has, which is their health and their health care, and putting it in the hands of the government." Now, that's a very basic, that's very good. I think most Americans agree with that. That's why we do not want Obamacare to be embedded in the American way of life. Chris Christie, oh, here you go. Chris Christie, good old Chris Christie said this: "We shouldn't cater to the wealthy at the expense of middle-income Americans and the working poor. Americans want opportunity," he said, "not the crippling diminishment of the welfare state." Well, you can tell he's one of those guys that's a conservative economically, but not so much when it comes to morality and social issues and so forth. That's who Chris Christie is. You probably already knew that. Ted Cruz, on the other hand, Ted Cruz is on the other spectrum from Chris Christie. He's one of the most conservative, especially Christian conservative. He said this: "Our rights come from God Almighty, not from government. Caesar has no jurisdiction over the pulpit. You cannot fight and win a war unless radical Islamic terrorism, if you're afraid to utter the words, radical Islamic terrorism." I think I messed that up. He says, "You cannot fight and win a war against radical Islamic terrorism if you're afraid to utter the words, radical Islamic terrorism." Ted Cruz, senator from Texas. Yeah, I agree, and you're right on, both with your comment that God is where our rights come from. They are God-given. We have been endowed by our Creator with certain rights that nobody can take away. They're just acknowledged. Our government must acknowledge them. They don't give them or take them. They have to acknowledge them. Then he also says, you have to say Islamic terrorism if you hope to defeat Islamic terrorism. I'm going to take a brief break here, give you some information about Facebook and about email and so forth, and I'll be right back. I missed the bottom of the hour, and so I'm going to go ahead and do it now. We'll be right back after this break, and we'll continue with the Heartland Nation program right here on WROL 950. Set beside me.
This is Bruce DeLay. Okay, I finally broke down. You can find me now on Facebook. Join us at Heartland Nation. Man, I'm on Facebook. This is Bruce DeLay. Let me hear from you by email. It's HeartlandNationHQ at gmail.com. That's HeartlandNationHQ at gmail.com.
Welcome back to the Heartland Nation. Bruce DeLay is my name. I'm here with you on Tuesday nights, 8 to 9 on WROL. Now, hope that you've got your heat source, you know, working, and maybe some salt to spread on the sidewalk to keep the ice down and so forth, your snow shovel handy. You're just hunkered down tonight and enjoying a little bit of talk radio. This is the American dream, to be able to get on here on a microphone and speak to you tonight. You might say a captive audience. Sometimes we're captive in our cars going down the freeway. Other times we're captive in our homes. And either way, works for me. Okay, so I wanted to finish up the program today with this story. This is from a website called Barbed Wire. Now, It's kind of a new thing. Matt Barber, hence barbed wire, is a very well-respected and longtime legal advocate for Christian civil rights issues. Matt Barber is a champion, you know, you might say, when it comes to the issues for Christians that we face today in the culture wars in America. Here, Matt is highlighting in a column by Audrey Russo, this from January the 26th, where she talks about Western leaders and about how Western leaders are responding, and she calls it puckering up to Islam's sword. Very dangerous thing to do. Western leaders who don't understand, either they, I guess, don't understand the threat, or they have an agenda that wants to use the threat, allow the threat to get close for some other agenda. Maybe they want Islam to bring down their culture so that they can remake their culture and after their own image, after a globalist, you know, ideology. Yeah, I think that would add up. Here's what Audrey says on barbed wire. She says, ISIS beheads high-profile individuals on video, and the first response from Western leaders has, you know, boggled the mind. It hasn't come out and said that, oh yeah, ISIS has nothing to do with Islam. Instead of saying, we got to stop these people, you know, no, their first words out of the mouths of Western leaders who are puckering up, she says, to Islam's sword is that, hey, don't forget, this has nothing to do with Islam. Islam is a peaceful religion. She says, Islamic jihadis, Al-Qaeda in Yemen, they storm Paris and they murder 12 at Charlie Hebdo for mocking Muhammad and four Jewish customers at a kosher market because they were Jewish. And the first response from Western leaders is, it has nothing to do with Islam. She says, let's get more specific. The United Kingdom Prime Minister David Cameron, following the beheading of British citizen David Haynes, said this, quote, they are killing and slaughtering thousands of people. They boast of their brutality. They claim to do this in the name of Islam. That is nonsense. Islam is a religion of peace. They are not Muslims. They are monsters, unquote. You know, I got to pause right here. I got to say, if I were in the shoes of a world leader like this at a time like this, I have to say I would not probably give a verbal response. I would give an overwhelming and lethal military response to these people. That's what I would say. It's like I've taught my son playing football. If you're getting, you know, talked trash to on the field, just point to the scoreboard. Just let your next play define your answer. Beat them and make a first down. You know, catch a pass and make a first down. Do something on the field. Block them, pancake them, put them on the ground. But let that do the talking. No need to talk trash with these. I don't want to exchange verbal, you know, barbs with these killers. I would just say, look at the scoreboard. We just bombed your headquarters. We just killed your leaders. We just killed your army. That's what I would do. However, to the point, this author talking about Western leaders that are sucking up, that are puckering up to Islam's sword. German Chancellor Angela Merkel said in response to rallies by Europeans who are against the Islamization of the West. So these are people who are trying to stop Islam, doing what they can, go out and show up at a rally, hold a sign, you know, try to say we're against Islam coming in, infiltrating, colonizing, and then one day taking over our country when they have enough numbers to go violent, like they apparently do in France now. No, she, instead of backing those people, she says this. The former president said Islam belongs to Germany. Listen, this is Angela Merkel speaking. I'm going to start over. The former president said, she quotes, Islam belongs to Germany. Then she says, that is true. I also hold this opinion, unquote. What? Merkel said this at a news conference with Turkish Prime Minister, whatever his name is, hard name. I thought Germany was done with fascist ideologies in the 40s. I guess not. President Obama singing his old song, the Islamic tune that he always sings, quote, ISIL, which is ISIS, is not Islamic, he said. And I've played you that quote on the morning program here on WROL, his own words. And in September of 2012, he told the UN, quote, the future must not belong to those who slander the prophet of Islam. Well, that's Islamic Sharia law, by the way, says that. He's just quoting Sharia law. Is that what an American president should be saying to the world at the United Nations? Of course not. They are doing what the sword of Islam, you know, the very goal of terrorism is getting you to submit in your heart before you submit in body. That is, you drop your ears, you drop your eyes, you look down, you kowtow, you become subjugated by their the fear of and dread of your enemy. That's exactly what the sword is designed to do, and we are puckering, this author says, we're puckering up to Islam's sword. Interesting. Well, these leaders are either astoundingly stupid, she says, or lying like a prayer rug. Mr. Cameron, for instance, must not know that the penalty for blasphemy against Allah, Muhammad, or Islam is death. And she gives Quran 693, 33, 57, and 33, 61. That the penalty for non-Muslims who are considering waging war against Allah is death by beheading. That's found in Quran 533, 812, 474, 9123, 2191, 545, and so three, we'll see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different quotes in the Quran, different texts saying that death by beheading is the penalty for non-Muslims who wage war against Allah. Oh, well, then we better not wage war against Allah. Wait, let's just say that's not Allah. That's not Muhammad. That's not Islam. Then that'll keep them from cutting our heads off, right? Maybe not so much. Mrs. Merkel says this. This is her, according to the response to her quote, punishment for slandering Allah and his messenger, Muhammad, is death. Quran 33:57-61. The Quran's opinion of women, by the way, Merkel would never be a leader in under Islamic Sharia rule. Quran's opinion of women is that women contaminate and defile. Yeah, you dirty women, you contaminate things and defile things. This is from the Quran, gives three references there. Women are inferior to men. It gives about five references there. And from the Hadith and from, the Quran, a woman's testimony is only half of that of a man. She's half as much worth a man is, etc. And then for Mr. Obama, ISIS bases its violence on the Quran. It's not just only Islamic. It is based on the Quran. It is more Islamic than Islam, okay? It goes more closely by the Book of Islam than most of Western Islam does. And it bases its violence on the Quran. Death to infidels and beheadings, Quran 5:33. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 references from the Quran. And it says enslavement is in the Quran. They base enslaving sex slaves and etc. On Quran 33:50, 23:5-6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more references. Punishment for the slandering of the Prophet of Islam is death. Three different references here from the Quran, and the president doesn't know this? Someone who grew up going to an Islamic school, you would think he would know that. As individuals, these leaders of Great Britain, Germany, and America, and other leaders of the West, she says, are free to believe whatever they want to. But their beliefs do not reside in a vacuum. These are the leaders of millions of innocent, freedom-loving people who deserve integrity and protection from their leaders. Protection from ideologies such as Islam and its totalitarian dictates, which are cloaked or burqa'd in religion. They are no more a religion. They are a cult. They're not a religion. That's all. It's a tactic. It's not a religion. There's plenty of information out there that they can get if they want to. So apparently, they just don't want to. This is Bruce DeLay. You've been listening to the Heartland Nation program. God bless you. We'll see you next Tuesday night right here on WROL 950, The Spirit of Boston. Please remember that our podcasts are available by going to Heartland Nation on Facebook.
Now there's kids that can't pray in school. $100 tanks of gas. I can tell you right now, this country ain't supposed to be like that. No, that ain't my America. That ain't this country's roots. You wanna slam on the Sam, but I ain't letting you.
This is Bruce DeLay. Let me hear from you by email. It's HeartlandNationHQ at gmail.com. That's HeartlandNationHQ at gmail.com.
You're listening to the Reclaiming America for Christ radio network on WROL AM 950. At 9 o'clock is the latest news and prophecy with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung and Prophecy Today. At 9:15 is Science, Scripture, and Salvation with Dr. Henry Morris. And at 9:30 is the John Ankerberg Show.